physics, which is a very intriguing topic and one I find very helpful because it made it possible for me to change my thoughts on many things about health and healing, but also about consciousness and humanity consciousness. It's all based on the exploration of an idea, questioning the nature of body language. What is the language that the body speaks inside of itself? In which way do cells communicate and understand each other? It's evident that cells communicate. It's evident that they have their own decisions that they take. They interact with all kind of ways. There must be a language that links them all. It seems to have a grammar, it seems to have a kind of syntax and idiom and semantics. So how could we best understand that? Because it's evident that when we look at the human body, the anatomy is not it. So to have this kind of interest in cadavers as they sort of start to teach people in medical school seems to be the wrong perspective. Because the people are not dead, and the body is not based on the deadness. The body is created by the living cells, maintained by the living cells. How did they do it? Is there a way that we can somehow grasp and understand what's going on? Because evidently, if there is that kind of body language, the language of the body, the language of the ongoing cell communication and the language which is the basis of the information and decisions that the cells live by and maintain, produce the body by, then what would that be like? I had that question in my head for a long time because I realized that the body, evidently, it's not the cadaver. We need to look for something else. It's clear that the body is the result of the physiology, which is based on the interactions of cells. But it's also evident that there is something in the body that connects it to everything else. So it's not just that we have a body language of the exchange of communication information between the cells in the body, but it's also something that goes on in the world around us. So I was wondering, how can I best get an understanding of that? Because I'm a wave engineer. I really like that whole notion of ripples and waves and interconnectedness and basically at the surface of things you can see things happen. You can even see communication, because the propagation of the wave on the ocean is a wave of communication, information. But it's also evident that in the body there's something interesting going on, because the body is so physical, but at the same time it is not. And how does that work, that the body can be so tangible but at the same time so fragile? And at the level that fragile or subtle or intangible side of the body, why is it that we know so little about it? Why is there no clear, definite exploration of it? There's interpretations and assumptions and the poetics and storytelling. So this is everybody who has a body doesn't take an interest in a body. Why is that? Is it so opposite of what we are? Is it so much the foundational that we are? Is it like the bootstrapping that you cannot pull up the boots that you're standing on? I realized that I had to look at the deeper level, and I was aware that wave mechanics and the patterns of waves on surfaces are very helpful for many things. But there's also something intriguing, because when you look at what happens in reality as a whole, we basically need to make a distinction between four levels of existence. There's the material level, where, say, the laws of physics apply, causality, consequentiality, stuff like that. But there is also the molecular level, where everything is very different. There is no causality, because the balance equation, things go forward and backwards, shifting relationships. It's all relative. There's no deterministic situation there. It's a process in time. It's actually a different dimension. At the underlying atomic level, things got much more vague and fuzzy. Materials is gone, molecules have dissolved, you're left with electrons, protons, neutrons. Basically an electromagnetic cloud. Okay, you get clarity in that. Specifically, if cells communicate, how can they use that? Go to a deeper level still. And then you're at the level of the photon field, and things are even more mystifying, rarefied, intangible. You're right on the edge of the quantum field. You're actually in the quantum field. You're not in this reality anymore. So how does that work in the body? And specifically, and this was the strong starting point of my whole exploration of method musics, the quest for understanding the language of the body. How is it possible that in our body this communication takes place, and how can we understand it? Because it is evident that this takes place in the form of information fields. But how? Because if we look at the light domain, then we can see that if you have one color and another color, then out of it comes a new color, and you don't know which the original colors were. They disappear, they merge, they now have a new color. You cannot see what happened before. So in the light field, we cannot get clarity on how the communication takes place, because basically whenever something communicates, we immediately see the result and not what happened before. In the electromagnetic realm, it's sort of similar, but a bit different. In the electromagnetic realm, you have these electromagnetic radio information fields. And if you have one field and another field, and then they come together and they form a field. But how can you tell them apart? How do you know which is which? This is the problem that Schrödinger and Bohr had when they realized that at the level of atomic physics, it's all just fields interacting. You're a field, the universe is a field, the interaction is a field. How do you know what one? So if I just skip a step and go from the atomic to the material, at the material level, material exchange is very different, because if you have a material object and another material object, you cannot push them through each other. That doesn't work. The one will push the other way. So there's an exclusivity in material fields. So in between what you have then at the molecular level is, say, the chemical field, the time field, the molecular movement field, the vibrational field, the sound field. And that's where I realized that this is where I can look for a solution. The whole of the body is one electromagnetic field. It goes from the photon level to the electromagnetic, to the phonon, the sound level, and the chemistry level, to the physical level. At the physical level, I cannot get things together. At the photon level, I cannot tell them apart. At the electromagnetic, it's just a confusion. But in the sound level, there is something which I can work with. not something that I'm very knowledgeable about, but others are very knowledgeable about it, because at that level we are dealing with wave fields of sound waves, and sound waves we call music. So I came up with the question, is it possible that this field of vibration of cell communication in the body, which goes all the way from the physical up to the photonic, with the chemical and the electromagnetic in between, and as one unified field, has these different degrees of density, as the alchemists already described, and at that level where we see it or experience it as sound waves, there we can do something interesting. But I will need to shift from what I know as a wave engineer, where there's all these descriptions of how you can relate waves and understand relationship of waves, you can see connections of waves, and the whole basis of field theory comes from there. Electromagnetic fields work in that way, quantum fields work in that way. But in the body, we can actually make sense of that kind of sound field. So I found a friend, psychologist, a singer, understands music very well, in fact so well that he studied the origins of music in the Egyptian tradition of Pythagoras, who came from Alexandria. And with him I started this exploration with the question, Hank Coy is his name. Hank, I'm trying to understand how cell communication takes place. I know that every cell has a cell cycle, let's call it a note. And I know that when cells divide, actually the one note splits, and they're slightly different notes, so they will have a subharmonic and a higher harmonic. I know that the cells divide on and on, which means that all of these cells are connected by these vibrations that they have, subharmonic, higher harmonics, and the vibrations of each cell. So how can we understand that in terms of music, and specifically are the things which make it possible to allow the use of music notation to get closer to the understanding of the language of communication of the cells of the body. Hank liked the idea, we embarked, we have been traveling on this route for quite a long time, and we have passed many different points of exploration on the way. So we were looking at the possibility to actually literally compare the cell cycle to a note or to a tone in music and what that would mean. And we looked at the way that the feed forward and the feed back loop between the two cells which emerged out of cell division, how they create a tone which can actually be stretched out a bit or shrunk a bit. And so it's a tone with a variation, a modulation to it. And how in music you would call that a Doppler effect, frequency shift up, or frequency shift down. And so we also looked at the different ways that in music there is this understanding of how notes can go from one octave to another, and that basically they have a spiral staircase and that they have a ladder. The spiral staircase is called the quince, and the ladder is called the octave. But Pythagoras, as Hank explained to me, already was aware that if you take the spiral staircase, or if you take the ladder, it does not necessarily mean that you end up at the same height on the other side of the staircase. There is something called the Pythagorean comma, in which you will actually need to fine-tune the ascendance through this quint, to the quint scales, or the ascendance through the octave, so that they actually match to the same frequency. And at that point I said, well, that is very much like what you have in mathematics, in what's called integration. If you try to understand how something works, you can use Leibniz, Newton's method of differentiation, and you can sort of look at the detail of the detail of the detail, and in the detail of the detail you can see that there is a tendency which you can sort of apply to everything and hope that it gives you a better understanding of what goes on, and very often it does. And then the whole theory of Newton is based on that. But at the moment that you go the other way, you say, well, I know something in the detail here, but now I want to see how it functions in the whole of everything, then it might mean that you need to adapt it, because it doesn't quite fit. And in mathematics, that's called an integration constant. So when Henk talked about this comma of Pythagoras, I realized that this is precisely the kind of fine-tuning that you would seek in an organism so complex as our body, as this network of cells that are communicating with each other, that are keeping each other in balance, that in their balancing act there must be a way that they can fine-tune. And then some point later in the discussion we realized that actually when we look at the cell cycle, which goes round and round and round, and then we look at the cell communication feed-forward feedback loop, it sort of goes forward and backward, forward and backward, forward and backward, a bit like an oscillation up and down, swing, that the feed forward and the feedback loops of each of those two cells is of course connected to the cell cycle, or the one cell and the other cell. So it was evident that there was this kind of Pythagorean comma fine-tuning at the connection between that internal cell cycle and the external cell cycle as well. Be aware, we're not looking at the physics or the biology of the cells, but we're looking at the system principles of the feed-forward and the feedback loop communication, and the internal communication, which is called the cell cycle. But at the moment that you have this understanding that the internal cell cycle and external feed-forward feedback cycle are all interlinked and connected, then it's also evident that it will be necessary to understand that for the body as a whole. So we have been exploring many different parallels, examples. So I've been looking at the development of musical history, how over the ages people singing then became people with specific voice qualities, and Henk explained that there were tribes using techniques of 10,000 years before, where they sing on the exhale, but they also sing on the inhale. And he then also said that this was later copied in flutes, where you can blow them on the exhale and on the inhale. And we talked about the relationship between the singing voice and the different musical instruments. Basically, beating your chest is what you then have with the drums, clapping your hands, drums, bellowing from your guts with the wind instruments, then the other development of the musical, the string instruments, where they have vibrations which you can tune. And so we saw that there was a relationship between say the drums, the string instrument, the wind instrument, and the singing, in a way connecting from the pelvis to the belly to the heart to the head in our body. So we kept on looking for relationships between music and the body, musical instruments, body organs. So evidently at some point we had the question, is the organ a organ? Then we realized that yes, the organ is an organ, but it is also a musical instrument, and as a musical instrument it's like a piano, but instead of it being a hammer instrument, it's a wind instrument. But like a piano, it gets from the deep notes to the high notes, and there are actually very tricky ways to do that. And like a flute, it can have a very pure note because it resonates just one frequency only because of the way it's built, while in a violin or a string instrument, most often you will have other vibrations vibrate on that same string as well. So the pure note doesn't come in, and you have these different tonalities. So do we have that in the body as well? Are there examples where the cycles in the body are very precise and exact? And are there examples in the body of cycles which are interlinked and they sort of interweave? And evidently they are. We also looked at the way that in the development of music from the singing, then there was this monophonic singing, and then there was this polyphonic singing, basically somebody singing alone, then became a whole group of people singing the same melody together. And it took quite a while before that turned into somebody doing one thing while other people doing another thing at the same time, and it blending well together. So there's quite a difference in music and the understanding of music from a simple song to complex song. And then of course there was this whole period where in monasteries and elsewhere they went haywire on finding out how they could start at one note and the one could go up and the other could go down, and one could pace two notes and wait a bit and the other would catch up with them. So they started to actually develop a music notation for playing with this, let's go up and let's go down, let's wait to catch up. Evidently there you can see that in music there is a possibility to describe these shifts in relationship between notes. Evidently something like that plays all the time in the body as well, and because you have organs which have their rhythm and other organs have their rhythms, you decide to do something, so suddenly your heart is doing much more than the other organ, and they need to catch up. So we were looking for and discovering all of these parallels between music and the body. It strengthened the idea that there was a possibility probably to come to matter musics as an understanding of we can somehow use music notation in describing what happens in the body. Let me straight away say we haven't started on that yet, because we discovered many other things. Some of the things we started to look at was what happens in the sound spaces. For example, you have somebody who's singing in a field, or singing in a forest, or playing a musical instrument. And then the sound goes out, and then it bounces back on the forest, or it bounces back on the mountains. You have these echoes. But there's also something else which is called convection cells in the air. When in the season the birds start to trek, they start to fly around, and then you see that at some point they all turn around and bounce back. And most often these are the edges of the convection cells where the air sort of has a kind of invisible curtain in between, so that the birds don't show that these are there. When you slowly heat water and you put a bit of coloring in it, you can actually see that at some points the water goes up and other places it goes down again. Those are called Bernard convection cells. So in air that certainly exists, and Henk told me about some interactions he had at a conference where there was a Norwegian oil driller, and he used his voice to find out where there were oil wells or where there were water lines under the earth or where there were earth lines in the earth. For the people who don't know that, it's really interesting to look into that. And there's some fantastic research project on that. So in this case, this oil rigger man was there, and they together as a group went then out and did, as the guy showed them, to use their voice to find a vortex on the terrain. Those are energy vortexes, spiraling dynamics. Not necessarily that you see something in the field or something in the terrain. Sometimes there's a vortex on a tree and you see that this tree actually has been vortexed, has that vortex shape. But so this guy showed them how by singing you can douse for that vortex. The people who work with singing bowls or singing therapy are quite well aware of that. That when you have somebody lying on the table with a singing bowl, you can make a sound. You rub the ring of the singing bowl and it will vibrate. And then when you approach the body, at some point, the tone will go duller or sharper. So you're actually interacting with the sound field, even though you don't hear anything. But you know that there is a sound field because the tone of this this ringing bowl just changed. And in the same way, you can do that with your voice. You can go closer to somebody's body and make a sound, and it too can go sharper or more muffled. And in that way, you can do a sounding, very literally, a sounding of the body, a bit like sonar, same principle, exactly the same principle. And then you hear that there is an interference or an interaction with that sound wave, that sound beam. So we realize that in the body that would happen a lot, because if you can sing into a vortex, or you can sing into the body, use a singing bowl to interact with the body, then of course that means that in the body there's a sound field already. But then that also means that in the body the sound field will be coherent or not coherent depending on how the sing song goes between those cells. So essentially you need to say that there is a harmony or a cacophony within the body. Rather than say that there's health or disease. And for me, of course, that's a very nice way of saying that the wave pattern is coherent or it is losing coherence. Wave mechanics shows how the loss of coherence can be understood and worked with. With the music notation, you actually have an understanding of what it could mean. So from these kind of layers of understanding of, yes, there is this music playing in the body, I can interact with it with singing bowls, but that also means that in the music of the body there are all these kind of processes of shifting melodies and shifting relationships, which doctors don't know, but which are not unknown. And that's where Henk then told me stories of the further development of music, how in churches music was basically banned because it was diabolic, and that there were tones and tone combinations which nobody should touch because they were supposed to call up the devil. And I said, well, it's logical that they had this because some of these tones, they actually interplay, but they implicitly address a range of higher harmonics, which you will actually need to sort of understand that they're there, because these higher harmonics will also start to interact with your environment or with the people in it. So as the church people had some difficulty with complexity, that's probably associated with the mindset, the musical development took place in a large part in taverns and bars and brawls outside of that. And that over a long period of time, there was a shift of understanding of music and shift of the experience of music, in which a drum and a flute and a string instrument and a singer, the normal quartet, became more elaborate and more elaborate, until at some point there was the whole symphonic orchestra. Then it still took quite a long time, and Hank had lots of nice examples about that, that people started to realize that symphonic music is not just have a folk song with more instruments, but that there was a possibility to look at the orchestra as a whole, as an instrument, and to actually have music which is based on first one instrument playing, then the other, and then the other, and the other, but the melody seamlessly goes on. So suddenly the instruments are part of a larger instrument, and the musicians are part of a larger organism. And so we looked at that relationship too. How did that develop, and how was the role of the musicians in that? Were there examples of musicians which did not use sheet music but could together play complex music, like some of the Kamerlandt compositions? They're totally improvised, but all of the people participating are they're together determining what will come out of it. Or is there somebody sitting behind a wall using a piece of paper telling everybody what to do, which is more the Western model? So Hank then also explained that in the development of music, there also was a quite intriguing phase of a transition where they, let's say, went through a transformation of trying to mimic the singing voice in an orchestra with more instruments, a larger range and all that, but essentially the simplicity of somebody singing, but now as a whole orchestra, to the other side of that, because there are people who are simply singing a melody, and then there are people who are singing a song. It took quite a while before in orchestration they were able to go from, say, rational and reason music to emotional and feeling music. And that's something which of course is now heavily and heftily used in all kind of Hollywood drama. Before it was used in theaters, because there was this understanding that through music you could actually invoke a kind of emotional association, identification, affinity in people listening. Evidently, if you hit the drum hard enough, it is like an earthquake, or it could be like a marching army or something scary like that. And if you have flutes and you play them loud enough, it can be like the howling wind or screaming people, things like that. With the violin strings, you can have the suggestion of heartbeats, and of course the association of romance and connectedness and tenderness and fondlingness. Actually, it took quite a while before in music a kind of language was being developed which could be used for all of those purposes. But on the other hand, in the body, it's evident that feelings and emotions are actually the starting point for all these compositions in the body. And so in the body, we have this ongoing ohm of vibrations of all of these cells acting together. Every cell has its own rhythm, its own vibration, its own frequency, its own note. All of them together produce this hum. And for us, we're in the middle of it. We hear it all the time, as a result of which we don't hear it. But when we interact with each other, like when you sound into the body of somebody else, or when you massage the body of somebody else, even though you don't hear it, you do know it. So these shifts of the internal sound field definitely are perceptible, even though they're not audible. So yes, we have the notion that with music it is possible to understand the principles of the complexity of the harmonies, cacophonies in the body. And also, specifically, if you look at symphonic music, that there is a relationship between many organs. So that's also what we put next to each other. The type of instruments that you have in orchestra, the type of instruments, organs that you have in the body. Can you correlate them? Are there a relationship between them? And Henk always has interesting examples of the way that these connections take place, with specific frequencies which actually activate people more or less, or which pull them out more, make them more introvert, and that there are relationships between those frequencies and those notes and numbers and planets and symbology. He has tunings for the purposes, so that when he's working with people, he uses singing therapy to also look to resolve psychological issues. As a psychotherapist, he's of course quite handy at that. And so then he selects a specific note which for their body and their mind, say, anchors them at a specific starting point for the story, so that they can get through or through whatever they're trying to resolve in a different manner. So there is that relationship between these tuning forks and the astrology. So we also talked about the relationship between astrology, planetary rhythms, day and night rhythms, tides of the earth, tides of the sun, and how the tides on the sun change the shape of the sun, which in the simplest situation would be a ball, but at the moment that planets are pulling it, they're elongating that ball in different directions. So instead of the sun being a ball, it becomes a lens, and so the radiation that comes out of the sun is let's say beamed more than just radiated out. And so there are moments that there's less radiation, more radiation, so that an evident logic that in astrology you would have affinities and association with that, that the gravo-electromagnetic field of the area around the sun, of course, is affected by that. We can see it in the plants, we can see it in the lunar menstruation cycles. There's a whole lot of measurements on circadian rhythms in the body and endocrine rhythms, which is associated with specific time periods. The meridian system, of course, takes that into account. So all of these kind of topics we discussed, because we realized that we could string them together now. On the whole, we also shifted to the understanding that what we were looking at the level of music, we needed to understand also in terms of what's happening within the cells. And there you have this interesting, say, word game, because when you're looking at the soundscape in the body, in the sound field of sounds, tones, notes, that's where you talk about phonons. And phonon is a sound wave which has its internal connectedness, a standing wave of sound, say a node of sound. You also have photons, which are like little knots in the quantum field for light. So at that point, Kelvin Abraham came into the conversation, the creator of Tetrionics, and he said, well, this is really nice, because what you're talking about with the molecules have been created by the cells and have been taken in by the cells, being transformed by the cells, being released by the cells at the cell level with the phonons, you can actually also understand as what happens at the quantum affinity for the atoms. So then you can see that there's photons connecting up to the atoms and photons coming out of the atoms, and that in that sense you have a kind of photon metabolism associated with the atoms, which parallels the phonon metabolism around the cells. So you say, well, actually, for different reasons, you can say that what happens at the atomic level is just a different scale of what happens at the molecular level. And as the Greeks had this god of vibrations, basically he was a wave engineer, called Apollo, he said, okay, let's call that Apollo constant, so that we can now simply say that yes, we can go from photons to phonons and back again, because we are interacting with an electromagnetic quantum field. As I've described elsewhere, we essentially just have one quantum field, and the principle of the tetrion, the primordial form of matter, and whatever happens at quantum field level with these tetrions is scalable in the creation of the manifest universe. So then we had some further ideas on how to relate the music to these principles, and tones and notes to that. Out come some wonderful diagrams, which we added to the collection. And then, of course, we still had to understand more of how the health and disease part comes into that story. And Hank had an interesting description of the contact he had with a farmer who had a sheep who was dying, but the farmer was willing to let Hank experiment on the sheep. So when the farmer was sure that the sheep was on its way to die, Hank was called in, and so Hank was singing with the sheep all night. At the morning it had decided not to die. So for Hank it was, say, a continuity of that insight that with singing and with sound balls you can interact with the body, but as a result you can also interplay with the body and change the awareness sensations of the body and functioning of the body. So that's where you then go from the understanding of music to music as therapy. Coming back to the tunings for us and the other things that he did, let me now switch to the thing that he recently did when he went to Egypt. He's done that a couple of years ago already. He's gone to the temple in Egypt, and there's quite a different sets of temples along the Nile. In that approach, the Nile is basically the spinal cord of the system. There's the Kundalini line, and then the temples are basically the representation of the chakras, the tuning points. And in those temples, there are examples of wells, and there are some depictions which seem to indicate that these wells were filled with water to a specific height, and that people were brought in the vicinity of those wells, and that tuning forks or musical instruments were played, and that the well functioned as a kind of organ pipe to amplify, resonate that frequency, but to the purpose that the people around it could retune their body and could regain their health. So there are also pictures of Egyptians with wooden staffs in their hand, and on the top of the staff are sort of wooden tuning forks. And they actually are wooden tuning forks. And with them you can then capture, store, transmit vibrations. There are also pictures of the caduceus. You can do that with that too. And Hank also has contact with Imam Karim, architect in Egypt, and he understands a lot of the biological morphology, the shapes that work in interrelationship with living organisms. And he then also created little wooden shapes which you can point at trees far away, and the vibrational system then changes. As one of my friends described, when he and his father were walking around in their orchard with Karim with them, they had caterpillars eating the leaves of the fruit trees, and Karim then drew a symbol on a piece of paper and the caterpillar fell off. So it is that kind of understanding of the relation between symbols and shapes and forms and vibrations which mathemusics is about. It is called mathemusics because the musical element is the core of what we seek to describe for the understanding of cell communication, and the aim is to interpret musical notation and music theory and music understanding outside of music and inside of the body. And there are examples of people who actually already operate at that level. For example, Raymond De Leo is one of the composers in the Netherlands Hank interacted with, who told him that when he's directing the orchestra in the concert hall in Amsterdam, he does hear the tram as it is coming outside of the building, even though the people in the building do not. So when he's directing, he's actually guiding the orchestra so that the activity of the tram forms part of what is being played and it doesn't interfere with it. So it's that kind of subtlety that we are looking for and trying to understand, trying to describe. Of course, the mathematical part of the terminology mathemusics is to show that we can link that to mathematics. And there's this whole knowledge of the mathematics of the wave fields, and that has been studied in so many forms. And the wave field mathematics is essentially the foundation of physics in many ways. Classical physics use it for the hydrodynamics and wind flows and all that kind of things. Chemistry, they didn't quite well know what to do with that chemical reactivity, and chemistry cycles are definitely corresponding with that. Electromagnetism, of course, was very happy with it because it fully fell in place. And now in the subatomic, the field theory is essentially that, capitalized on fully. So the mathematics is the unifying instrument for all sciences, because as I described in my text, metamathematics, in the way that a musician looks at the score of music and then can perform that music so that you can hear it, in the same way a mathematician can look at a notation on paper and can think it. So the music notation is actually a process of logical operations within the brain. Mathematics is therefore actually a language to help people think in specific ways. Evidently, mathematics thereby is also the immediate connection to physics. And so in math and music, we then have mathematics and physics on the one side, and music and physiology on the other side. And that's also why, with the help of math and music, I was now able to come to a much better understanding of this relationship between, say, mind on the one side and physiology on the other side, or psychology one side, physiology on the other side, which is building the bridge between the psyche and the soma, so that in math and music we actually get the understanding of the psychosomatic principle. And that is the project as we are doing it still. So we keep on finding more examples, we're getting more insights. So what I told you just earlier on the thoughtscapes is part of that understanding, that we actually can now get much closer to a notation or an understanding of consciousness. Because a lot of people have difficulty with consciousness because it's intangible, you cannot measure it, yet we all operate by it. So the science guy says it isn't measurable, it isn't visible, it can't exist. All the people who have a brain know that they are thinking, so they realize it does exist. So in this kind of combination of music notation and wave mechanics, physics, mathematics, we can now bring them to one, which is funny also because it sort of dissolves the gap between them. Like the psychosomatic is seen to be one, likewise the mathematics and the music can be seen to be one. So that means that the mathematics of the physics of the science is much more funny because it's actually a dance. But on the other side, that the notation of music actually goes much deeper because it is a notation of experience of consciousness. So on the whole, that makes math and music a very glowing, slow, funny, and enthusiastic, lively, and inspiring exploration. But most of it, it is definitely showing to be a wonderful instrument to reconnect mind and body, say to reconnect science and religion, to reconnect thought and action, and to basically demonstrate that the cells, and thus we, are at the pivot of that connectedness. That was the story of math and music. So much more to tell.